This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Iran, the suspect nuclear weapons program, the negotiations in Vienna. The last episode indicated the negotiations were at an end and Iran had walked away from the table. Well, Iran is walking back to the table. We welcome Thaddeus McCotter, American Greatness, and Malcolm Hoadline, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. We begin with the on-again, off-again table in Vienna, the excellent pastries. Malcolm, a good evening to you. Is it sanctions? Is it walk away from the table? Is it restart the negotiations? Is it secret handshakes? What is it in Vienna, Malcolm?
I would say yes. Those are all possibilities. The talks resumed with a lot of bravado being expressed beforehand, you know, everything from leaders of the foreign ministry of Iran saying that they have good news about the sanctions that would be announced in the coming days, and everybody anticipated that that would have a relevance to the talks. But in fact, it has to do with their outreach to 15 of their neighboring states that the Raisi will be visiting. They already cited Turkmenistan, where they were able to double, they say, the trade in the 100 days since Raisi came into office. And they said they have a 20-year roadmap with Russia, which is almost ready, and a 25-year roadmap with China, which is done. And they're trying to paint the picture that that they are going to be moving ahead. But the fact is that they're very dependent upon the outcome of the talks in Vienna. Even the Europeans are expressing deep regret and about the inflexibility of the Iranians, that they came there without any intention of really moving ahead. The United States responded with sanctions against 15 individuals and four entities in Iran, Syria, and Uganda, which, of course, the Iranians reacted negatively to. But they hit Iran special forces officials and Syrian intelligence officers. They did it on a basis also of human rights violations that they introduced these in the talks themselves. You know, the United States is not a party to the talks because they pulled out of the JCPOA, but they are very much present there. So far, the indications are that there has been no real change. Iran tried to put out statements that there was positive, there was some progress, that they are forthcoming. The fact is they are not forthcoming. The United States warned the UAE banks not to do business with Tehran, and as they tighten the sanctions, and they're fearing of, you know, fraying on the fringes. When the Russians say the talks are constructive, you know that we're in real trouble. And the Vienna talks ended after an hour initially, and then they went back for a pause, and then they were reconvened. But so far, there's no indication that Iran has any goal other than getting back billions of dollars. They're talking about less for less now, not more for more. And this is a weakest level of negotiations and of outcome. The fact that the E3, France, Britain, and Germany, have been rather tough in their responses is quite important. And U.S. and Israel have been having various meetings, which we'll discuss, to discuss everything from military drills to practices destroying nuclear facilities, as well as discussions about any kind of actions and trying to limit Israel's options, I think.
Malcolm, is there a timeline that makes sense, or do these talks go on till next year, the year after, endlessly?
I don't think that they can go on endlessly. I think the parties are very anxious to get to a deal. I think the Western parties want something. They don't have an option right now, plan B. So they are going to look at this. But they have said, and Blinken said just the other day, that we're not going to tread water in the talks. That they, if the Iranians don't come to the table with serious purpose and getting back to compliance, and as well as some of the Europeans, he said that we will not just wait around for them to
Malcolm, the Iranians drained the pool a long time ago, but let's move on to a timeline that does make sense. The defense minister of the state of Israel in Washington, along with the leader of Mossad, for a conversation about Plan B, and it includes the KC-46 mid-air refueling airplanes that Israel has on order, four of them. What did he learn?
Well, Israel made a request in the talks about speeding up the delivery of KC-46 refueling jets. They purchased four. They asked the United States to expedite delivery of two of them because they're not due to be delivered for 4 years. And the current planes that Israel uses are 50 years old. The KC-46 can keep dozens of fighter aircraft airborne for 12 hours. Obviously, this would be critical in any kind of operation involving Iran. So this is indicative, perhaps, of the reluctance of the United States to support military action. I know that there were discussions of joint drills, which would send a very important message to the Iranians that the United States and Israel were serious about this. Remember that Israel is right there. It's a neighbor. It doesn't have the distance that the United States has. And things that Gantz brought up was about, in addition, was how Iran is building up its forces in Western areas to attack Israel, Western areas of Iran, increasingly using attack drones and attempting to provide these weapons to Palestinian terror organizations as well. And he tried to make this case to U.S. officials.
All right, let's go to the region then. Raisi, the newly elected and, what you'd have to say, unusually outspoken president, is traveling in the region to 15 countries. To what end, Malcolm? They're going to stop droning them for the moment that Raisi's there?
Well, the goal is to visit all the Central Asian countries to expand on their economic ties, that this is a move to look eastward. As you know, the economy of Iran is in free fall, so they believe that they can build up their ties by trade with Russia and China, obviously, but with the East largely, and particularly with the countries in the region from Azerbaijan, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, etc. The fact is that they don't have that much to trade. Obviously, energy is oil will be a major export, but many of these countries have it, and many of these countries don't want to be subject to American restrictions or retaliations for what they do. So this is a big show that he's putting on, but I'm not sure that it's a substitute for the actual talks. And until the sanctions are relieved, Iran's economy cannot grow, and its currency continues to drop.
That is...
Malcolm, what can you tell us about Mr. Bennett's trip to the UAE?
Well, it was very significant because it was the first visit by a prime minister of Israel to the UAE, and there had been other high-level exchanges, but not at this level, and there were meetings between the Crown Prince, and they came out and said they were very positive. His Bennett's report on his return was very upbeat. Clearly, UAE is very worried about Iran, but because, I believe, of their lack of confidence about where the U.S. and others are, they have been increasing their talks with Iran, which is, in its essence, an archenemy. But Iran does a lot of business through Dubai. It's a major trading point for them to avoid sanctions. This is a very sensitive relationship for them. So the talks with the UAE, I think, were to shore up the Abraham Accords. We see them being strengthened in many ways across the region, and talk of other countries again coming in. But they look, UAE, for instance, very concerned about what's happening in Lebanon, where we see the buildup, where we see the unrest. There was a funeral this week after an explosion in a refugee camp, which they said was oxygen tanks. It turned out to be a weapons cache underneath, I think, a mosque. And it blew up and people were killed. But then at the funeral, Hamas and pro-Fatah forces started killing each other. So they look at all of these situations. All of them are sources of unrest, which worries the countries in the UAE. And they're always worried about Iranian adventurism, and knowing their designs and continued support for the Houthis, who have stepped up some of their attacks on Aramco and on defense institutions in Saudi Arabia.
Oh, Malcolm, what can you tell us about the King of Morocco and restoring critical sites?
Yes, the King of Morocco, again, continues this remarkable record of reaching out to the Jewish community and restoring the historical Jewish sites, which go back perhaps 2,000 years there, but he's restoring hundreds of synagogues, cemeteries, and Jewish heritage sites in several cities in Morocco. This follows earlier actions at some of the key locations where cemeteries that had long been abandoned were all restored. And it's a message to potential Jewish visitors, Israeli visitors who are coming in the thousands to Morocco, COVID allowing. And again, a sign of his enlightened approach to the world. We see that more and more public statements, articles being written about the new normal that's being established when the defense minister of Israel can visit Morocco, as he did.
And finally, Malcolm, Ben and Jerry seems to have attracted the attention of seven state treasurers.
Well, following the action of a number of states, New York, New Jersey amongst them, the state treasurers of Arizona, Idaho, Oklahoma, Nebraska, West Virginia, Louisiana, Mississippi wrote to the CEO of Unilever saying and asking why the company hadn't acted to override Ben & Jerry's boycott of the Israeli territories. And they say that their legal experts have reviewed it and that Ben & Jerry's board exceeded their contractual powers and want the board of Unilever to reverse it. So far, many states have sold their shares in Unilever, and eventually it's going to have a real impact, and aside from being very bad PR for the company. So this is a very important statement by these seven state treasurers.
Turkey, Malcolm. Turkey is in distress, economic distress, because of Mr. Erdogan's upside-down opinions of interest rates. At the same time, you tell me that the people of Turkey are either unemployed or cannot buy food that they need, such as they buy half bagels rather than full bagels on the street. However, what most matters is Turkey's conduct towards the PKK in and around Iraq. You tell me that the U.S. has ended its mission to Iraq. What is the threat that Turkey represents to the PKK?
Well, first of all, Iraq, the mission in Iraq has, official operational mission has concluded, although we retain 2,500 soldiers there just as a presence. Turkish fighter jets have hit PKK posts again to neutralize, meaning to kill six fighters, which they admit to. We don't know how much more there are. More than 40,000 people have died since 1984 in this conflict. But Iraq launched, the PKK, the Kurdish fighters, killed three of the Turkish soldiers in the north of Iraq, and this was a retaliatory strike by Erdogan, who takes this issue very seriously, and as you know, has been fighting in the region, trying to and is occupying land that Assad has demanded they return. And while at home, the currency lost 45% of its value. People are converting their savings to foreign currencies and gold in an attempt to save whatever value they have. And you're right, they sell half bagels because people can't afford to buy the whole bagel on the street. And
all right.
And it all centers around Erdogan's weird vision of what interest rates mean.
If you buy half a bagel, do you get half cream cheese? Is that how it works?
You don't get a schmear at all.
You get half a schmear. All right. Final funny question. You've got 15 seconds. The Algerian army is chanting. What?
They chant, and this is a video that was on YouTube and available, where they chant as they march, "Death to the Jews. If you see a Jew, kill a Jew." And so there's no deniability. This is the army of in its training, extolling the killing of Jews.
Malcolm Hoenlein, Conference of Presidents, Thaddeus McCotter, American Greatness. It's time for the Dusty One. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.